Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi guys, I'm Jim. I'm the Leicester City representative for the EPL Roundtable. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88.
Hello, I'm Jay. I'm editor of the Eagles, Beak.com, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. You can get me most from Twitter at the Eagles Beak. And I'm also a co-presenter on Back of the Net, which is a local community football show, which you can hear online or if you're in the local area. You can get us on Twitter at _backofthenet_.
Hi, I'm Peter. I'm editor of Hull City social media group Tiger Link. You can see us at www.tigerlink.co.uk, and we're on Twitter and Facebook at HCAFC Tiger Link.
All right, well, thank you guys so much for joining us today. Of course, up first we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs recently. We'll start off with you, Jim. Leicester do emerge victorious against Swansea in a deluge. Maybe not the best end to the match, but pretty exciting at the beginning.
Yeah, it was until the last 10 minutes. I think it was pretty comprehensive, the victory, or it certainly looked like it was going to be. It always started quite well. We've got a recent kind of, not hex over Swansea, but there seems to be a team we can beat with a fair amount of regularity. And it kind of started the same way last season finished, really. We had plenty of possession, created quite a few chances, and then there was one just really good move. Daniel Amate won the ball back just inside the Leicester half. He got knocked down and there was a long ball over the top. And Jamie Vardy did his custom trick of smashing it in the back of the net, which was nice to see. It was a little bit wild, but it went off the inside of the post. There was a few of us kind of wondering whether it was going to creep the other side because it was the other end of the ground to us. But yeah, so that was a good start. And then we doubled the lead just after half-time. Wes Morgan got a goal, which is a rarity for him. So he always enjoys scoring and he goes pretty full-on with the celebrations and stuff, which is nice. So at that point, we were kind of coasting. Then about 5 minutes after that, we got a penalty. Shinji Okazaki was kind of pulled over, tripped over in the box, should I say. And we thought, right, it's going to be a rout now. Up steps Riyad Mahrez and customary misses his penalty. I think that's three of his last four he's missed now. So there's got to be a discussion, I think, about penalty duties and potentially putting Jamie Vardy in charge of that. I know Jamie took one off Riyad when he was on his spell of 11 consecutive goals. 11 consecutive games scoring. But that was to kind of elongate that record because I think we were already 3-0 up at that point. And so he took the penalty off from them. But normally it is Morris's first choice. And obviously he did score against Hull on the opening day. But that's only one of his last four he's scored now. And to be honest, there are going to be a lot tighter games than Swansea. And, you know, in a match which is a little bit more competitive, that could potentially cost you. And then, yeah, the rain kind of really intensified and we seemed to lose a lot of intensity. I don't know what happened or why that occurred. Maybe it was a drop off in fitness in terms of us still not being 100% sharp. We also seemed to kind of just, yeah, we seemed to sit back on our laurels a little bit, to be honest. And it just seemed like we thought we were going to coast to an easy victory. Leroy Fer pops up in the box and nods one in from a good ball in from the right hand side, and it's game on again. And then by then, the pitch is very much it looks like a swimming pool. Players are slipping over, sliding over. You know, there's no amount of the right studs that will keep you upright in that condition when you're trying to play at full pace. So the game got a lot more open. There was chances at both ends, and Leicester really should have wrapped it up. We had some really good chances actually in the last 5 minutes through Mahrez and Ahmed Musa, who came on as a relatively late sub. But yeah, in the end, we just managed to hold on and get the first win of the season, which I think is maybe why we were so nervous, in the sense that because it has been a couple of games since we've won and we didn't have a good pre-season, we played these big teams, but we largely got hammered. And so that winning feeling wasn't there in the same way that it was, you know, at the tail end or for most of last season. So it was, it was a little bit of a nervy experience, and the elements certainly didn't help.
Yeah, I really am still hoping to see a still shot. I'm sure it was slightly painful, but of that Leroy Fair header, the way the water like flew off his head as he was hitting that in, I'm sure that there's somebody with an angle on that that's amazing. But keeping it with Leicester, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, and we've talked about it before, which is Musa versus Albrighton, and you've discussed that you think it's basically what formation are you going to run out with. If it's a 4-3-3, then it should be Musa. If not, maybe you stick with Albrighton. I just think Musa's pace brings a different dynamic to this attack that already has pace with Mahrez and Vardy. Have you swayed your opinion there at all?
I would probably have swayed my opinion if Musa would shoot. He doesn't seem to want to shoot. I don't know whether it's because it's on his wrong foot and all the chances have come to him on the wrong side, or whether he's just really nervous. But then he scored two great goals against Barcelona. I know it's only a pre-season friendly, but it was still Barcelona. I mean, it's a pretty high caliber of opponent, even in pre-season. And he was so assertive that day, especially the first goal, where he ran, you know, half the length of the pitch and slotted it past the goalkeeper. He was so direct. And he runs with the ball, but he just doesn't seem to want to pull the trigger at the vital moment. And I think that at the moment is what's keeping him out of a starting place, essentially. Because, I mean, the best compromise for me is him being the second striker alongside Jamie Vardy. And then you can leave Albrighton on the left wing. I'd actually change the wings round, because I think both of our wingers work better as inverted wingers. But, you know, it's difficult because he's obviously come into the club. I don't know exactly how match fit he is as well. Like, he played relatively well against Hull, but again, all he wanted to do was set up Jamie Vardy. And there's a couple of chances where you've really got to be selfish in those situations in and around the box to just pull the trigger and take your chance and get your name on the score sheet, because then that will hold more sway in the manager's kind of thoughts, I think, than being unselfish and squaring at someone like Vardy, who at that point put it over the bar. So it's just getting that first goal, and I think once he gets one, he'll get rolling, and then that's a really scary strike force. If you've got Mahrez and Albrighton bombing down the wings, and you've got Ahmed Musa and Jamie Vardy through the centre, then, you know, that's a really powerful, pacey attack, and that will kind of be a match for anybody. I think Albrighton's still also got the brownie points stocked up a little bit from last season. Obviously, he's kind of an unsung hero in that team, in the sense that a lot of the players around him have been lauded and capped by their countries and stuff. You know, Danny Drinkwater's just been called up into the England squad again today. Unsurprising after his kind of assist yesterday. It's a perfectly flighted ball for Jamie Vardy. And if you're going to pick Vardy, you really need to pick Drinkwater, because the two are just so in sync from the club game that, you know, Drinkwater deserves to be there on merit, but also what he can offer elsewhere. So I think Albrighton's having some of those, you know, brownie points used up at the moment. He's not been especially brilliant for us. And I think, you know, he's got to maybe start producing a bit more if he wants to keep his place in the team, especially if we make some moves in the transfer market in the next few days. He could well find his place a little bit more under three.
All right, well, thank you for that. Now we're going to head on to Jay to talk about Crystal Palace. Obviously, some big signings of late. You get Benteke, Mandanda finally in the side. Townsend gets the 10 kit. It's not as important to Celtic, needed to be noted. The performances, unfortunately, have not come despite the big signings. What are your thoughts on Palace at the moment?
Where do I start? it's been a crazy build-up to the season. You know, we did our business early, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, which was like very unlike Palace, but it still kind of left us with a few gaps. And then obviously the Zaha story kind of came out in the press last week, and Tottenham making a derisory, so Steve Parish called it, £12 million offer for Zaha. It's rumoured that he hasn't been happy at Palace because of the low wages he's supposedly on, and we've obviously signed these other players, which I think you can kind of understand. When you're signing big-name players for big money, then you're going to have to pay them big wages as well. Obviously has a knock-on effect to the players that are currently at the squad. And obviously, Bolasie made his made his thoughts clear on that. And Blassie's a player that's, I think every season he's gone and asked for a pay rise and through his agent. So I think a lot of Palace fans kind of thought that there would be a time when Blassie would move on, and I think we got the right deal for him, which we were talking about just before we came on the podcast. But going back to Zaha one, we can't afford to lose Zaha as well. I mean, Blassie and Zaha were a big part of our side last season. Whatever happened in that second half of the season, it's the way we played and the way we set up. So we need Zaha to stay. Steve Parish came out on the radio in the week and said that there's no way he's letting Zaha go in this transfer window, so he'll have to suck it up. And that's basically what he said on the radio. So to be fair, you know, Parish, well, hopefully he will keep to his word and we will keep Zaha at the club. But I think, you know, we saw yesterday when he came onto the pitch that he gives us a different dimension. He gives us something, you know, quite different. And I spoke to you, Kev, about it online when the news broke. And, you know, it doesn't seem like Spurs fans are overly keen on Zaha going to Spurs anyway. Yeah. But going on to the game, and obviously, you know, it's our third game of the season, Premier League game of the season, yesterday at home. It was a game, you know, two bottom clubs. I mean, this is very odd because the Premier League table is, I used to remember, it wasn't kind of published until about five games in. But, you know, two clubs at Selhurst Park yesterday playing each other without any points. So it was billed as a big game, and it was billed as a big game because of Pardew, really. And a lot of people, a lot of media are saying that, you know, perhaps it's harsh on Pardew that he's being labelled as a manager that's in trouble. But I think a lot of people are forgetting the torrid second half of last season that we had. And as for Palace fans, it kind of feeds into the season. And for me, Pardew had to get off to a good start, and he hasn't. You know, we lost at home to West Brom in the first game of the season. Narrowly, understandably, it's a very narrow loss. But you could only see what way it was going the longer we went through the game without scoring. And in the second game against Spurs, very similar scenario. Went through the game, rode our luck a little bit, came into the game, and we lost by another set piece. Very, very same scenario as the West Brom game. So we were going into the Bournemouth game, really, well, with the sign of Benteke, you know, during the week as well, and the thought that he would start this game, it was difficult to know what kind of mindset Pardew was in and whether he was going to go with, you know, the players that were coming back from injury as well, the likes of Kabay. He actually started MacArthur, who's been a massive loss for us. He started yesterday as well. Mandanda in the Palace goal is, for me, I think is going to be a signing of the season. I think it was a minimal $2 million that we paid Marseille for. An absolute presence in goal. He really is. He made his debut against Blackpool in the cup in the week, and I know that's a League Two side, but you could just see he exudes confidence in that game. He can use both feet. He's comfortable with the ball for a goalkeeper. He wants the ball. He comes out very quickly. He's always talking to his back line, and that's something we've really missed. Hennessy doesn't do that. He doesn't come off his line very often. He's not very good with his feet, as we've seen. Did okay for Wales in the summer, but he's made more mistakes than he's actually made saves. And Mandanda yesterday was excellent. A lot of people have questioned him for the first goal, for the Bournemouth goal, but I'm not quite sure what else he could have done, really. Very, very hard shot, went past him into the bottom corner. Kind of blamed the fullback a little bit more than that. But, you know, 11 minutes in, Palace are 1-0 down. I have to say the fans were excellent yesterday throughout the first half. It's probably the worst first half I've seen us play for a long time. We started as a 4-4-2 formation to accommodate Benteke and Wickham up front. Clearly didn't work in that first 15, so Pardew changed it to have just a one man up front as Benteke and put Wickham out wide. But again, Wickham's not a wide player. We had Zaha on the bench. But we kind of rode out that first half and it didn't really work. But we came out second half, completely different side. We absolutely bombarded the Bournemouth goal for the duration of that 45 minutes. And it gives us a real, you know, shot in the arm to get that equaliser, even though it was late on. You know, we had a corner straight after that equaliser as well, which we could have quite easily scored from to go, you know, to take the win 2-1. Which, you know, on the balance of play, the way the second half went, you couldn't have begrudged us that, really. No way should we have lost that game. It would have been a travesty if we had. So a lot of good signs yesterday. Puncham was excellent in the middle. I think he was our star man. Benteke, some really good signs from him, some good touches. Clearly not match fit for a whole 90 minutes, but he did play the whole game, which is obviously good to get under his belt. As I say, Mandanda is a real impressive, and I think I understand that there were quite a number of clubs interested in bringing Mandanda to bigger clubs than Palace across Europe. So that's a real coup for us. But Scott Dan, fantastic. You know, went up front, scored with a header, really good header, great ball in from Punchin, fully deserved. And the only thing that I'm a bit disappointed with it is that we haven't seen a Scott Dandenne in the England squad tonight. I feel so sorry for the guy because he's been outstanding for us since he's been at the club. I understand in the build-up to the Euros he was never going to get into that squad with the way Palace were playing, but he started the season very well. Even the first half of last season, I don't understand how he didn't get a shout, but excellent centre-back. He's been made captain for this season, which shows exactly what it means to the club, and he's leading by example, as he showed yesterday.
Yeah, you mentioned Mandanda. I think that obviously is a very good signing. We already mentioned some of the other big guys. Do you think you'll be really doing anything else this window?
Yeah, well, there's a big rumour that we're going to get Loic Remy on loan from Chelsea for a season-long loan, which will be... we need somebody else up front. We can't just have Wickham and Benteke. Wickham's injury-prone, as we know. I'm not sure... I can't see them two playing together as a front pair. So we needed somebody else, and I believe he's one player that's going to come in. I do know that he's looking for another defensive midfielder and a right back and a number 10, which I think we're looking at a number 10 from Brazil, highly rated youngster. I can't remember which club it was for, but there's been a few comments about a player over there, and our owner is over in New York at the moment, so whether we're adding two and two together to get six, I don't know. But I think we're going to see a couple more bodies across the line before the close of play on Wednesday.
Fair enough. All right, coming to you now, Peter. Very good weekend for you, although it might not have felt it as the match against United drew to a close, but I thought it was a very good performance, and I think the neutrals really saw the stuff that your squad is made of at the moment. Low on bodies that are available, and the performances have been pretty inspiring. I know I and many others have now pretty much ruled you out of the relegation fight, which might be a bit early, but very positive signs from you. And in the match program, we find out that the alums are indeed selling the club. What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the kind words, and I think that's a pretty good summary of the game and how I saw it. Can rewind a little bit, really, just to say that obviously, in terms of signings, we've nothing to report so far, so it'd be a pretty short segment if I talked about signings. But obviously, I'll move on to talk about people we've been linked with in due course. But given that we still only have round about 12, 13 players to choose from, 14 maybe, it was particularly enjoyable to have a 3-1 win away. Exeter in the cup in midweek, because I think even when you're a Premier League side, it's good to win, and that made it 3 out of 3 for Mike Phelan, and it was only Exeter, as people say, but you know, a win is a win, I always think, and one of our forwards, Adama Diomande, got a couple more goals, and that was also very positive coming into the game. So just reflecting a little bit on the wins over Leicester and Swansea, two very good wins for us, played pretty well, and certainly fair to say that the momentum from winning at Wembley back in May, I think, has stayed with the side. The side is playing as a team. They're playing for each other, despite the departure of the manager, Steve Bruce. And whatever his future in terms of whether he gets the job or not, Mike Phelan, I think, has put himself on the football map and shown that, you know, he has potential perhaps to make the step up from assistant manager to manager, which, as we know, is quite a difficult one to make sometimes. There have been some great backroom guys in the past who never really made it up to the top level as a manager, but were very, very good assistant coaches. So, yeah, we came into the game against Manchester United on a high. Leicester, I think, were slightly undercooked when we played them, but we matched them very well and played well. Swansea away, I think tactically we got it absolutely right against Swansea and sort of absorbed the pressure and grew into the game. And it was in many ways a classic defensive performance away from home. So there we were yesterday coming into the game, sitting rosily in the top five of the Premier League, and the fans on a real high. Now, I'll finish with talking about the ownership issues, and that may move into the sort of the second part of our discussion tonight. But the game on Saturday I was delighted with. Obviously not the result. But I think the important thing was that we showed the same resolve and teamwork and work rate that we'd shown in the first three games, the first two Premier League games in particular. Snodgrass, if he stays fit this season, I think will be a key player for us. I think he's playing extremely well. And Curtis Davis at the back, considering who he was playing up against, had a tremendous game. And I was delighted to see that. Manchester United are, this season, a much better side, I think, and played well against us. They have some star names. Mourinho has got them playing very well. And that made it particularly pleasing that we did play so well and match them, I think, particularly in the first half. And it was the departure of Snodgrass, I think, that was a changing point in the game, in that perhaps after that we weren't quite so likely to score goals. But I was always hopeful that we would get a chance to win the game, and we got a half chance through David Myler not long before Manchester United scored late in the game that might have won it for us. But it was the defensive organisation, the discipline, the work rate. I mean, many Manchester United players had reasonable, adequate games without actually looking spectacular. And for much of the game, they played very neat football, had lots of good possession, and dominated us territorially, but didn't create loads of incisive chances and really work our keeper. So on the day that it was, where the rain's pouring down and, you know, you get this dreadful feeling, oh, there's going to be a sucker punch. And it came, and we lost our discipline a little bit. But I was pleased to hear your comments, Kevin, because I think probably, you know, a couple of wins we've had, and people will be saying, oh, Hull City, you know, it's a bit of a fluke, early season, you always get some strange results. And I would buy that to a point. But I think in many ways, the performance yesterday was as impressive as the previous two, because we played Manchester United at a time when they are really up for it. You know, they have a 100% record. We were probably the first side this season to make them look ordinary at times in terms of their ability to break up sides. And I was really pleased with all the players who were involved. I mentioned Curtis Davis. I'd also mention a young lad called Sam Klukas, who came to us from Chesterfield and whose roots are in non-league football. We know, you know, it's always nice to see someone like that rise to the top. And he's the classic example of a player who is getting better by the game. Up front, Hernandez and Diamandi are always likely to get a goal. We will see whether they are quite good enough to score 15, 20 goals in the Premier League. And the goalkeeper, Eldin Jakubovic, made two or three excellent saves again. And it's a little strange that at a time when we have 14 professionals on the books, that we're the only real signing we appear to be moving towards is a goalkeeper, and we could end up having 15 players and four goalkeepers. But that may be a reflection of the fact that Alan McGregor, a fellow Scottish international, is out injured at the moment, and it may be that his injury is more serious than we've anticipated, and it could be a long-termer. That's the word going around the club at the moment. Happened to see him in a local supermarket recently, and he was walking very, very gingerly. So the purchase of Marshall from Cardiff City, and he's due to have a medical tomorrow, is, on the face of it, a slightly strange buy, given sort of the overall makeup of the squad. But that may be something to do with a longer-term injury to McGregor.
Yeah.
Looking at potential signings, I mean, Ryan Mason of Spurs is still getting a lot of mention, and various wonder kids from around Europe. And the most recent confirmed rumour, if you like, is that we're going to possibly put in a club record bid for a guy at Bristol City whose name I can't remember. I don't know if anyone knows the player, but he's a well-regarded forward playing for Bristol City at the moment, who
who I think was left out of their squad at the weekend. But we're in a situation where basically we've got a change of ownership coming along. We're going to be bought out by new Chinese owners. That's going through due diligence and being looked at the Premier League by the Premier League at the moment. And it will probably take a fortnight for the takeover to actually take place. So I think some fairly involved financial arrangements have to be put in place in order to allow us to purchase players within the transfer window, whilst at the same time doing that in anticipation of a change of ownership. Now, that would be difficult at the best of times, but our dear friends and current owners, the Alams, have been full of mischief the last 2 or 3 years and have done everything within their power to wind up the fans and indeed some of the playing staff. There's still an element of suspicion and a lack of trust around everything that's happened at the club. Mm. So if and when the club is sold officially and everything is signed and goes through, and we can say categorically we have new owners, there will be this sigh of relief that sends a tsunami down the Humber estuary, because the Alams have been desperately bad news for us, particularly in the last year, and they've been perilously difficult owners ever since their name change request was booted out by the FA 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Alams. Yeah, we'll get to the Alams a little bit there.
Yeah, I won't say much on that because I know we've got another part of the show later, where I'll talk about that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We played Liverpool, first match of the weekend. Did not necessarily go our way in terms of performance, but I think we were very fortunate to end up leaving that match with a point. I think we were outplayed for the most part, and I love statistics. Many people know this about me, but the stats weirdly not very accurate in this one. Stats mostly saying that this was an even match, and it felt like Liverpool were pretty much the better team pretty much from the 10th minute on. The Walker injury that we sustained very early on, which some are saying was an illness, some saying it was an actual injury, we're not really sure yet, changed things a lot. We took Eric Dier, who was playing in defensive midfield, moved him to right back. We moved Dele Alli, who was playing on the left wing, to central midfield. And then we brought on Vincent Janssen to push Harry Kane back to where Eriksen was and Eriksen out wide to where Alli was. You don't usually want to do that in the first 20 minutes of a match, completely overhaul the positions of four or five players. So considering all of that, absolutely we'll take a draw. Kane, Alli, and Eriksen all are still not up to snuff, but as I just mentioned, all of them were playing out of position, kind of again, which is an issue when we have Janssen on, who I do rate very highly. He has not yet put a ball in the net, but I think his performances have been very good. But how we manage to fit all of them on at the pitch is going to be very important towards our successes this season. The bright side is that we've gotten 5 points out of our first three matches, despite playing about 60 minutes of good football this year. Obviously, you'd like that number to be a lot higher, but we could have really been struggling in the table thus far, and we are not, which is definitely of benefit. I mentioned Janssen there. Wanyama already really looks the part. Nkudu is allegedly on his way for about the fifth consecutive week, but we will know by Wednesday, fortunately, when the window closes, so we'll know by then. But yeah, we should be just about fine as far as players go. Nasser Chadli has just agreed to join West Bromwich Albion. That should be done on Monday or Tuesday. I always liked Chadli. It is clear that he was kind of slipping down the pecking order. Something that we needed from him last year was to be able to be a supplement for Kane up top if we ever needed to rotate. Wasn't really able to do that. His performances on the wing dipped. He can be a very creative player. He has a terrific finish on him. For people that are familiar with American football, I like to describe Chadley as a tight end, where he's too fast for center backs and he's too big for wing backs. So he's a matchup nightmare. There were effort issues, which is a big problem for Mauricio Pochettino, and is not a small problem for Tony Pulis. But obviously he would walk into that side and would be a very much needed threat for them, for those people that had to suffer through their match against Middlesbrough this morning. Them having more attacking players is desperately needed. So a little sad that Chadley's gone. As you said, Mason might be on his way to Hull. It sounds like he's also negotiating with Sunderland, so that'll be interesting. And these are players that a lot of fans grew fond of. Jay, this is a sentiment you'll understand, of players being let go that the fans like but maybe aren't in the best interest of the team anymore. Where, you know, Chadley isn't starting for us, but he scored 10 goals 2 years ago, so a lot of people have an affinity for him. Then you have Ryan Mason, who came up through the academy. He surpassed Tommy Carroll, who was supposed to be our best prospect for about 5 years, never really developed the way we wanted. Then Mason came bursting onto the scene. Tommy Carroll suffering a little bit of what I call McEachran syndrome, who was at Chelsea and went on loan for probably about a decade and never really put it together. But Mason is... Peter, kind of like Livermore for us, where he was in our system. We grew him for a while. He isn't at our level, but he's at a Premier League level or thereabouts. So deserves a move. He does. And he deserves to get minutes, and he'll do fairly well at a smaller club. It's just, you know, is he better than Dembele or Dier or Wanyama or Ali? No. But we're getting decent returns from them. I think we got 8 for Livermore back in the day. That's about what we're hearing for Mason. Looks like it's going to be 13 for Chadley, which is about double our investment. I think we got him for 7 when we got him from the Eredivisie. So a lot of people concerned about this, not just because it's players that have mattered for us before, but because we're thinning the herd right before the season starts. I think the Champions League draw helps us. I'll talk about that here in a second. But it is a little sad to see them go. But I wrote an article actually for Jay's site, The Eagles Beak, I think it was last year, maybe, about the loyalty of professionals, loyalty only exists if the player is at the same level of your club. Because if they're above it, the player wants to leave. And if they're below it, the club wants to move you on. And how so we're just Mason? At that point.
How old is Mason?
25, maybe?
Yeah, so he's at the age where he needs regular football, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he might be a little younger than that. I might be overaging him there. Just because it was kind of a surprise when he came through. Because, you know, he wasn't like one of the like really talented kids you hear about in the academy. It was just all of a sudden he was playing every week. And I remember he got his debut against Arsenal. And we were just like, what? How can you do that? You know, you guys know. One of those classic lineup meltdowns you get on Twitter right before any match. But about going on to the Champions League, we're in that, which is very exciting. Jim weirdly didn't address their draw, which was very kind, by the way. For us, it was very pleasing. It was on Thursday, and I was very nervous going in. Then after the first two rounds, I made sure to take notes of this. The groups we could have gotten would have been with Juventus and Sevilla, Madrid and Dortmund, or Cesca and Leverkusen. So we were pretty much hoping we would get the last of that group. And then through what I can only assume was divine intervention, we did draw that group, Group E as it is. And it was the easiest group that we could have been drawn into at that point. I forget what the other group was. There was one that I wanted, but apparently 3 of the English sides can't be on the same side of the draw, which was a rule that I somehow missed while they were quickly trying to explain it while the host was trying to take selfies with footballers. That's a whole other thing. Group E then ended up rounding out with Monaco, who were one of, if not the toughest group in Pot 4. And us drawing them, I thought, was really interesting because there was a direct difference between American Spurs fans and British Spurs fans when we drew Monaco. Because all the American fans were bemoaning our fate. Oh, we should have gotten an easier side like Ludogorets or Legia of Warsaw. And we were like, oh man, we just got an easier team. And all the UK-based Spurs fans were like, finally, a decent away day. And I just thought that was a really interesting dichotomy there. And because we got Monaco in there, as well as CSKA and Leverkusen, it is a very good draw for us. There are no easy matches, but there are no exceedingly difficult matches for us. If we play at our best, we should top this group. The funniest comment, and I'll end this Champions League conversation with this, the funniest comment I saw was Tottenham. Even when they're in the Champions League, they're in the Europa League. Because all of those teams we played in the Europa League. Oh, and a really surprising stat that's also worrying. We've never lost to any of the teams that we drew in the Champions League. So knocking on all the wood there. But it is an interesting stat nonetheless.
I can't believe you said that, Kev.
I know. What am I thinking? I'm a madman.
Because that's being recorded and it's going to be played back to you in a few months' time.
Oh, absolutely. But that, you know what? That means our listens are up. People are quoting me back to me. You know, no such thing as bad press. Now we will head in to the topic briefly. Those intros took a long time. And part of that is because I didn't get to speak last week. And so I was chock full of stuff that I needed to get off my chest. But we alluded to it a little bit with Peter there, which is ownership structure. Hull are set to have new owners. So I just thought we'd ask the group, are you content with your current owners? And do you think there might be a change in that position anytime soon? Peter, it just seems right that we lead off with you.
Yeah, I'll keep it reasonably brief. But just to say, really, when our current owners arrived 3 or 4 years ago, everyone was deliriously happy because they had money and they seemed an ideal fit with an ambitious, what was then, championship club that was trying to get back to the Premier League. They are from Egypt, but have basically been in East Yorkshire for best part of 30 years plus and run a marine turbines business. So on arrival, they were extremely popular. But what we've seen through these 3 or 4 years is that as long as those owners are kept happy and they get their way, then everything is rosy. But a lot of them, and certainly our owners, the Alams, come from a my way or the highway environment and are used to getting their own way. And when Mr. Alam Sr. allegedly fell out with Hull City Council and wasn't able to negotiate the purchase of the ground, this spurred him into wanting to change the name of our football club from Hull City AFC to Hull Tigers. This was rejected eventually by the FA following a campaign led by a group called City Till We Die. I was one of the founders of that, very proud to do so. And it seemed like a great victory at the time. And I should add that many other clubs around the country, I know Palace in particular, gave us a lot of support on that. But yeah, it seemed like a huge victory, and that was the end of it, and we'd won. But far from it. And I don't think our owners have ever been the same since they were snubbed by the FA and told they couldn't change the name of our club. And that has had serious repercussions off the pitch. Ironically, over the last 2 or 3 years, we've had a lot of success. Return to the Premier League just now, of course. We had a dalliance with European football and the Europa League. We reached an FA Cup final where we put up a very creditable performance against Arsenal. But alongside that, we've had an absolutely dreadful PR from the club, the total breakdown in supporter consultation, some absolutely ridiculous mischief behind the scenes, and most recently, the only football club, or indeed sporting club, I believe, in Europe, who has a membership scheme where concessions for pensioners and youngsters are withdrawn and there are no concessions for them. It's almost as if after the FA snub, the owners were so upset and their pride was hurt so much
instead of leaving immediately as they promised to do, they just wanted to create as much mess and mayhem before they departed and get as much publicity as possible before they left. The reason they stayed on is that they said they wanted to find a suitable and good owner. I'm not so sure whether they meant suitable and good for the people of Hull and their supporters or suitable and good for them, and was still a little bit concerned that when the takeover occurs, whether or not there will be a sting in the tail from them when they move on. They've already dumped BBC local radio from their rights to broadcast the games, and we think there may be other stings in the tail that will cause a further legacy of sort of hate and resentment against them. So it's a real shame, because they arrived and they could have been heroes, but following the FA decision, they did everything to make themselves unpopular and really have tipped over into gross irresponsibility as owners of football clubs. So finally, my summary is, money is fantastic, rich owners fantastic, but regardless of where they come from, they are possibly slightly dangerous sets of people to have at the helm of something as big as a football club. We all know that, but what I've seen at Hull City over the last 3 years has proved that. It isn't all glory if you suddenly have loads of money to spend. It's not as simple as that.
Yeah, I can empathise a lot there, what Peter said, and we fully supported the campaign that the Hull City fans are on to stop the club, or club's owners even, change their name, and we're proud to have been a part of that, actually, and obviously a success in the end, because the FA turned it down, which was just an absolutely ludicrous decision to try and make by the owners, really. And there are owners out there. It's not just Hull City that have owners which are causing the problem. We played Blackpool in the week on Tuesday at Palace in the League Cup, and I was chatting to a fan group. Well, it turns out to be a protest group for Blackpool, in protest at their current owners, who are very much running the club in a way which is seeing them... Well, they were in the Premier League not so long ago. I think it was 4 years ago. And now they find themselves in League Two. Club's been stripped completely. The fans aren't going. I mean, I think I counted less than 50 fans at Palace. In contrast, we pay £15 to get into the game as Palace fans. Blackpool fans pay £25 because £10 of that went to the Blackpool owners. I mean, it's just ludicrous. It's just absolutely crazy. And then you've got... there's Blackburn are suffering with their owners as well, who don't seem to have much of an interest in the goings on of the club. So there are owners out there. In terms of Palace, I think we've been quite lucky. I say lucky, we've been in administration twice, but that was more owners being a little bit foolish in terms of, you know, those two owners that took us into administration were both fans of the club, trying to do the right thing. The first one, Mark Goldberg, he bought the club at a point where he just wanted to throw money at it. Gave Terry Venables a job, which he obviously managed a team in the 80s, looking back into history, and wanted to kind of try and emulate some sort of success, and that went badly wrong. Second time, Simon Jordan. It's very peculiar, this one, because the last time I went into administration, again, Simon Jordan was a businessman, Palace fan as well, trying to hit the best for the club, and a bit of a loan deal went wrong, and we were taken to court over a smaller loan than a lot of clubs run at these days, to be quite honest, and we were less than 24 hours from going out of business. And the actual feeling of that, you know, people saying to me, you can go support another club, and that, you can't say that to somebody whose club is just about to go out of business. That was 6 years ago. We had a consortium that bought the club, four owners, headed by Steve Parrish, four fans again. And you kind of think, yeah, we've heard this story before. We've been here, done this. Palace fans, a little bit different to what we just mentioned about Hull and Blackburn and Blackpool. But these four owners are successful businessmen in their own right. The good thing is that they all had an equal share. They all had a say in the running and the decisions and things like that, which I think it's not just one person. I think it's perhaps better to have more than one person making decisions. And it worked out fantastically. That has since changed. At the start of this year, we had two Americans, bought into the club. So Steve Parish is now the chairman, and the other three owners of the original consortium that took us on have taken a bit of a step back in terms of their active role. But we have the two Americans that came in and I think pumped about $100 million into the club, which has allowed us to do a few things that perhaps we couldn't have done until a few years' time. But we're now in our fourth successive season in the Premier League, and I think, you know, we've gone from strength to strength. I mean, I will end by just saying that the consortium bought Palace for $4 million back in 2010, and we've just spent $30 million on a striker. That just seems absolutely ludicrous to me. If you'd have said that to me 6 years ago, then I'd never have believed, that it would be in the Premier League for 4 years in a row, let alone paying $30 million for a striker. So in terms of ownership, I think we've been very lucky relatively recently, since our last administration at least, that we've gone on from strength to strength with a very sensible set of owners.
It's a totally different story for me. The guys are kind of having a kind of frank and honest discussion about the pitfalls of foreign ownership, or indeed ownership of any kind in Palace's case. You know, Jay mentioning their fans that are pumping money into the club, and, you know, football clubs are by and large money pits. You know, you can't, unless you're Ken Bates buying Chelsea for £1, you really can't make money from football these days. If you're going to own a club, it's just too much of an expensive pursuit, you know, to get anything profitable out of, unless you're kind of draining a club like Manchester United, who's got this global brand that you can take money out of. But, you know, the Leicester owners, we've been extremely lucky. Like Palace, we've been in administration not too distant past. We've had issues with Milan Mandarić and stuff, and owners when he was in charge. Obviously, the guy's owned several football clubs, clearly knows what he's doing in England. But, you know, those football clubs aren't necessarily all flying high at the moment. If you look at some of the clubs he's owned, Portsmouth and Sheffield Wednesday, are very much below where their high point was. So there's issues there with him. And, you know, when he sold the club to the King Power Group, as it were, at the time, we were, you know, sceptical. I think everyone was, you know, when you get this foreign ownership come in, because they literally have no ties to English football, let alone to Leicester. And, you know, four years on, we really can't say enough good things about them, to be honest. I think a lot of fans around the country probably look at Leicester as an example of how a club should be owned. One of the first things they did in the first kind of year and a half was to write off £100 million worth of debt as a share issue. And that basically made the club debt-free for the first time in about 15 years, I think, which in modern football is ridiculous, really, to think that, you know, a lot of clubs are running huge deficits, either through overspending on infrastructure and stadia or wage bills and stuff like that. And obviously there is a lot of TV money going in as well. But, you know, as Jay touched on with Palace, just buying a £30 million striker, you know, the astronomical costs of doing business are eating into that big fund that you're going to get from the Sky and BT deal over here in terms of broadcasting rights. So, yeah, the guys that run Leicester are exceptional. I suppose that, you know, we are very lucky to have them. I think there's a big appreciation within the fan base that the money that they've put in isn't crazy money. You know, there's plenty of owners that have put more money into their clubs, but I think the way they've gone about it is building the club from the ground up. They made sure the right staff were in place. Brought, you know, Nigel Pearson went and came back again from Hull. They decided he was the person to lead the club when we went down, and to lead us back into the Premier League. And one thing that made me laugh, and, you know, Leicester fans got roundly kind of jeered at for a statement that came out, less than two seasons ago now, or two and a bit seasons, should I say, in May 2014 it was, our chairman came out and said that he wanted to finish in the top five of the Premier League within 5 years. A statement which was kind of rightly at the time laughed out of the park, because it had only just been promoted and we were expected to struggle. And for that season, we did struggle. You know, we spent the vast majority of the campaign in the bottom three, very nearly went down, stayed up by the skin of our teeth. The 14th place finish doesn't really do it justice quite how much of a get out of jail act we did under Nigel Pearson. So to see that kind of vision come to fruition two or three years earlier than planned is incredible. the owners have been very, very good and generous with fans in terms of incentives and schemes. And, you know, our season ticket prices are some of the lowest in the league. They've been frozen for the last 2 years. I actually got a reduction on my season ticket recently as season four last as a returning customer as opposed to a new one. So my season ticket actually went down the year we stayed up in the Premier League compared to the year we won the league, which is incredible. And you know, they are just very good with their PR. They're very open and honest with fans, and you know, the generosity to away support in stark contrast to Hull's, which I think is one of the big issues with their supporter base. I know that, you know, there's qualms there, quite rightly so, over the lack of provision for travelling fans. You know, the Premier League asked every club to ring fence. I think it's £250,000. It might be, I think it was £500,000. One of the two to kind of subsidise some kind of away supporter act. For example, you can get a coach from Leicester to any away game for £10 return, no matter where you're going in the country, whether it's just up the motorway or to the other side of the country. That's subsidised by the club as part of that ring fence fund, which allows, you know, considering this came in at a time where season tickets were away tickets weren't capped at £30 like they are now, which is still a lot. You know, that's still a lot for a game of football, especially on top of your season ticket, etc. But in times where you know we've paid upwards of £40-50 for a ticket, it's nice to know that your travel's kind of covered off partly by the club, and that kind of puts a cap on the day to make sure it's not too expensive to price fans out of following their team. So yeah, it's a bit of a change of tone, I guess, to the other two guys who've got issues with the various ownerships, past and present. But yeah, we're very, very lucky. And I think, you know, I hope most of Leicester fans, and I know most of them do, appreciate quite what we've got, because I think we're the exception rather than rule, which is a shame, because it'd be nice to see those statements reversed and most fans kind of singing their owners' praises rather than picking up on the qualms of how they're mistreating their football clubs, which to most people are, you know, one of the most important things about their lives. And it's a real kind of shame to see, you know, footballing institutions almost kind of going to the wall for the sake of, you know, money or the greed of a few, and to the detriment of the many, really.
Yeah, my Tottenham history isn't that long, so I've only ever really known the Daniel Levy / Enoch era, so no sugar talk from me. But I do think it's an incredible feat that Levy and Enoch have kept us where we are for so long. I know Levy gets a lot of stick, both from Tottenham fans ourselves and from the media, about being very stringent with his money, especially when we're dealing with transfers. Like the Nkudu deal, we tried to renegotiate many times. I think Jay was on a point earlier talking about the Zaha deal. I think that was a mutually beneficial thing for both Levy and for Zaha's representatives. They wanted to get a bigger contract. We wanted French club to think that we had other options other than just Nkudu, so it drops his price, makes Zaha get a better contract. And we've done things like that before, Jay, in our WhatsApp group for the Eagles speak. I was talking about what we did for Burnley with Danny Ings / Kieran Trippier. We offered $10 million for Danny Ings when his tribunal was supposed to be $5 million, but that raised to Liverpool, which I think had to end up paying $8 million. And in return, they sold us Trippier for just £2 million, which was an absolute snip. So, like, we're all about these weird, shady deals. So that wouldn't surprise me. And so a lot of fans get frustrated by that. We won't just go out and spend the money. And then the 1 year when we did just go out and spend the money, which was the Bale money, it did not go very well. And we misspent a lot of that. We are finally getting a return on Eric Lamella. Eriksen has had his ups and downs, but for around $12 million, which is where we got him, that was an absolute steal. But for the most part, the rest of them suffered, and now we're about to see Chadli out the door, which means it really is just Eriksen and Lamella left from that summer. And I think that was I don't know if it was a detriment, but it definitely made Levy reevaluate, because it seemed like he was finally willing to spend the money, and then it went so poorly that now we've kind of reined it back in. And I've seen comments as recently as today, where people are saying, well, why won't we just go out and spend $30 million? And that's why Paul Mitchell is leaving, is head of player acquisition for us, is because he personally vouched for Michy Batshuayi and was pushing that deal. And we offered in the mid-20s, and Chelsea offered in the mid-30s, so we went to Chelsea. And first of all, I don't know what Paul Mitchell thought he was getting into when he started working at Tottenham, but if he expected us to just randomly pay $30 million for players, he signed up at the wrong club. And Jim, it sounds like that might be your burden to bear next, as it sounds like he's flirting with you guys a fair bit. But
Well, we are about to pay $30 million for a player, so maybe he wants to come and work for us instead.
Yeah, with Slimani. Yeah, that'll be interesting. But that's not our style. And I love Michy Batshuayi as a player. I am very frustrated that he ended up at Chelsea. But if you had asked me if I'd rather have Batshuayi for 33 or Janssen for 17, it's a pretty easy decision. And it's not the more expensive one. So, yes, we have not went out and bought the big player. A large part of that is wages. We've only ever paid two players. And I realize this is not the show to be talking about this on. But we have only ever had players break our wage budget twice. And it was Gareth Bale and Emmanuel Adebayor, which was a subsidized deal from Manchester City. Those are the only two players at our club to have ever earned more than $100,000 a week, which is why I said it's laughable on this show. But we've stuck to our guns financially. We've run a very tight ship. And part of that, and part of all those surpluses, we're the only club in the last 5 years to have a budget surplus when it comes to player transfers, is that now we're able to fund our stadium. Because not all clubs can just get the taxpayers to pay for theirs. Cough.
Ouch.
But we're going to be able to build our own stadium. So all the fans that are constantly complaining that Levy doesn't do enough, you know, look out that now open corner of White Hart Lane where you can see the future, literally, in dirt and in steel, the upcoming future of this club, which is the new stadium. That's where the money's been going. How many clubs bigger than us have risen and fallen in the time that we've been in the Premier League, or in the time that we've been in the top 10? We've only been out of the top 10 once in the last decade, and that year we won the League Cup. Like, this is a very, very stable situation we're in, and I don't want people to start thinking of stability as boredom, because it isn't. And we often make fun of Arsenal and Liverpool fans for their self-righteous, we deserve to be winning the title, that kind of stuff. Our self-righteous version is we deserve to be in the Champions League. We finally got there, but if you take the ego away from it, our club is currently in a very healthy state, both financially and in terms of confidence in the club from the fans. The players all love playing there. You hear it week on, week out from all the players that it's a brotherhood at the club. There is a small hiccup with the Paul Mitchell thing, wondering how that sorts out between Levy and Pochettino. But all in all, I think Levy and Enoch have done a very good job for us. As to will there be a change? I'm pretty sure there will be. The whole point of owning us for a long time was building us up, getting a stadium built, then selling out on top. And I think that will still happen, especially with the NFL signing on to help us build our stadium in order to be able to play NFL games there, so they don't have to worry about Wembley's schedule like last year where they couldn't play there because I honestly forget. But there was some reason the NFL wanted to do four games at Wembley last year and only did three because Wembley could only have a certain amount of events each year, which is now laughable because it's going to be our Champions League stadium, and next year it's going to be our Premier League stadium. But all in all, very pleased with what Levy and Enoch have done. Is it frustrating that we won't just go out and buy some huge name? Sure, but we're doing it very healthily. That lack of signing big players is what has allowed so many of our good young players to come through. So all in all, very pleased with what we're doing, and long may it continue. All right, we were going to talk about players we might sign and player watch. We've kind of already done that, so we're just going to stick to the typical recent matches, which players, which impressed. If you weren't disappointed in anybody on your team, tell us somebody that did impress you from the other side. We'll start out with Jim and Lester.
It's quite difficult to criticize after kind of such a dominant performance, although the scoreline doesn't necessarily reflect that. But Riyad Mahrez, probably the player that disappointed the most in terms of, I think he's still missing something from last season. He's not looking quite as sharp. I don't know whether it's his personal life, which I think a lot of people forget about in terms of footballers and their form and what can affect that. But he's not, he's looking quite, kind of firing at 60%, I'd say. And when last year he was consistently putting in kind of 90% plus performances. And I think it's so frustrating to know that he's not quite at his best, because we know on his day he's so capable of, winning games single-handedly for us, which he did on numerous occasions last season. And, talking about the Champions League, Although our group is, you know, somewhat kind in quote unquote, we're going to need him to be at his very best, you know, to compete with the likes of Copenhagen and Bruges, and particularly Porto, you know, who have that European pedigree. They're not inexperienced in that arena. They've won it, you know, fairly recently. So he's going to need to be at his very, very best when those games get going. And that's only 2.5 weeks away. And you think, well, you know, what's going to change in the meantime? But hopefully he gets his head together. He signed a new contract, but he's still not kind of showing the glimpses of the brilliance that we've seen over the last kind of 2 years since signing him. So of all the players, you know, it's difficult, but I think he's the one that maybe didn't do himself justice against Swansea. Player that impressed the most, Daniel Amati, for me, actually, came in place of Napoli's Mende, who is injured for a couple more weeks, by all accounts, due to the issue he picked up against Arsenal. And he had to come off for, I think he kind of twisted his knee and his ankle in the turf. So when he'll be back, I don't know if there's an accurate accurate timeline on that yet. But Amati kind of stepped into the breach in central midfield with Danny Drinkwater and was outstanding. The guy really looked like a much bigger version of N'Golo Kante, which is, you know, high praise indeed, considering how well he's kind of slotted into Chelsea and is basically running the show now for them in central midfield. Interceptions, accurate passing, and, you know, a real strength and drive on the ball. And I think that allows Danny Drinkwater the freedom to go and do what he's best at, which is, you know, assists and long-range passes and kind of creating moves. And Amati was that perfect destroyer role, kind of picking the ball up 40 yards from his own goal, turning, making it either a simple ball to someone in space or to start in the move himself and drive him forward. And, you know, I've seen on a lot of the highlights, haven't kind of showed the stuff that he did because it wasn't necessarily highlight reel, but it was just play in, play out. He was absolutely superb. And, you know, it's a really encouraging sign for us that he was played there, because I think he struggled to produce his best form for us so far because of the fact that he's so versatile. He's a victim of his own versatility, in a sense that Ranieri said afterwards on the radio, I was listening to his interview, and he said, yeah, he can play right back, centre back, right midfield or central midfield. And unfortunately, when you get a player that's that versatile, he's more often than not covering for a position which isn't his best, which is central midfield. And he was just, yeah, he was just sublime. So I have, as much as Danny Drinkwater is going to get the plaudits, you know, Jamie Vardy looked brilliant, Amati was man of the match by a country mile for me. And, you know, hopefully that just means we're going to have even more competition in central midfield. So when Mendy does come back, we've got that depth in the squad that we're going to need when we start competing on multiple fronts with the domestic cups and Europe as well.
Mm. All right, and Jay, who impressed and disappointed for you?
Well, I'll start with disappointed. Connor Wickham, I so want him to do well for Palace. I really do. And he showed glimpses last season, but he was in and out for injury. I think he had 3 spells out injured and 1 out suspended. So that's a lot of games to miss. But when he did play, he showed us what he could do. He scored goals when he played towards the end of the season. He came back and scored 2 goals against his former club Sunderland as well. We started as a 4-4-2 formation, which I can't remember the last time we played a 4-4-2 formation, and him alongside Benteke, which clearly didn't work. And then through no fault of his own, Pardew chose to put him out wide and changed to just the one up front. So he's not a wide man. He can't play the wide role. He's not that kind of player at all. So you can't entirely put the blame on him for not particularly performing. But he's a player that I don't know why I just like the way he is, the way he plays, or when he is playing to form. But hopefully we'll see more, because you know, he scored against Blackpool in the week when he came on after 2 minutes of replacing Benteke, and we thought, well, you know, this might be you know, just to fire him up a little bit after Benteke joining, which is always good, healthy competition and all that. The other one disappointed is Johan Cabaye. I think last season, you know, a lot of Palace fans gave him, you know, gave him a lot of credit because he came to Palace. He didn't give us what we were expecting him to give us, but he still played well throughout the season. But there's little areas where we thought he'd be better than that. You know, paying the kind of money we did, and, you know, his previous you know, playing at Newcastle and previous time in the Premier League. And obviously yesterday he missed a penalty, took a penalty, missed a penalty. The last penalty he took, he missed as well. We believe he took the ball off of Benteke. Benteke wanted to have it. Kubai said, I'm going to have this one pulled rank, and I missed it. I can't see him taking another one. I think Jim mentioned earlier penalty problem, penalty taking problem. So, he missed an awful one against Newcastle towards the end of last season against his former club. Missed again yesterday, which would put us in a really good position at a good point in the game. I think it was only 5 or so minutes after that Bournemouth actually scored. So it was kind of a critical point in the game where we could have actually gone on to win if we'd have got the leveler then. So, they're the two that disappointed me. As for impressed, I've got three players written down here, and I can't pick between them, to be quite honest. Jason Puncheon had an excellent game. I think he covered the most ground from any player in the Palace side yesterday. He had the most touches in the opposition half throughout the game, and he also provided that critical assist for Scott Dann. And if you see the goal, it's a really nice move by Palace, but Puncheon kind of turned on the sixpence to get that cross in from almost kind of a central position in midfield. And Scott Dann still had a lot of work to do to get enough on it to head it over Boric, but excellent play by Puncheon yesterday. Really good. Scott Dann is the other one I would mention, because just he's got the captain's armband this season. And he's just continued where he left off last season, but with the added responsibility, that's what you want. Yesterday was what you want from a captain, to kind of, get the lads together. And, if you need to do a job and try and get that goal, then he was there and he did that for us, which is fantastic. The other one, I've already mentioned him already, Steve Mandanda. We had a big problem with the goalkeeper position last season. Tried two keepers, Sproni never got a look in last season, unfortunately, but it's been in McCarthy and Hennessy, and they both made mistakes throughout last season. McCarthy's now gone to Southampton as their number two. Hennessy, I would say thankfully, but that's not nice. Hennessy was injured yesterday, so he couldn't play. And that gave a lot of Palace fans, didn't make us joyous, but we just needed somebody. We wanted to see Mandanda and what he could do. And he showed us what he could do, what we thought he would be like. He came from Marseille with, a lot of Marseille fans said a lot about him, disappointed with with the fee that we paid for him. And to me, from what I've seen already, it's an absolute steal. As I mentioned, he's just a big presence at the back. He organises the back line, even though he doesn't speak much English at the moment, we believe. And just comfortable with the ball. Uses both feet for a keeper, and I think the save that he made came out. It was one-on-one. Callum Wilson yesterday was through on goal, and he was so quick off his line. And he was there before Callum Wilson could actually think about what he was going to do with the ball, which was actually fantastic. So really looking forward to more from him. Mandanda, I think he's going to be a good signing for us.
All right, and Peter, we already talked about the great team performance you had, but were there any individuals that stuck out for you?
Yeah, first of all, just to sort of reiterate that, there's the old cliche in football, isn't there, about playing for the shirt. And certainly all our squad at the moment are playing for the shirt. I wouldn't like to draw on any individual that had a poor game yesterday, because I don't think there was anyone. OK, maybe Hernandez, Diamandi up front didn't have spectacular games, but they worked hard and they didn't get that much service. I will just select, and this is rather naughty of me, really, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to select one player from the opposition, Fellaini, who is an interesting player to me, because when we first played in the Premier League, Fellaini was very impressive playing for Everton. But in his Manchester United role, I realise that he does a lot of dirty, unfashionable, unseen stuff. But I'm not so sure I find him as impressive as perhaps some do. And I'm a little bit surprised that he retained his place in the Manchester United side so readily. Didn't think he was particularly impressive yesterday at all. And I just want to get that one in there. And I'd be interested in other people's views on that. I just want to big up Curtis Davis, which is will be a surprise to you if you know Curtis Davis, and it's a bit of a surprise to me. But I think it's a lesson to everybody, and particularly lesser players in the Premier League, that, stick at it and work hard, because it's not long ago that Curtis Davis was struggling to get in our side in the Championship. The arrival of Michael Dawson saw his nose put out a little bit, and he lost form, and he was struggling to get in our Championship side. Now, more recently, and at the start of this season, he's been playing really, really well. And I thought he had a wonderful game yesterday. Some of his blocks were out of this world. His work rate
And reflecting on his career, he probably isn't England class. That will have passed him by now. But had things gone better for him, I don't think he would have been far away. And I would suggest that sometimes when we talk about England players and when England squads are picked, and I know there's been a squad picked tonight, which I haven't had a chance to look at, I think sometimes we need to look at players who consistently apply themselves and show considerable effort alongside and equally to those who have considerable ability. What I'm saying there is, you know, let's not always pick the glamorous players who can be brilliant, who don't show it very much, and maybe let's pick a few more steady performers who really will play for the England shirt. I struggle to give too many examples, but I think the recent exit of the England football team, I would have liked to, you know, when we lost to Iceland, I would have liked to have seen a bit more blood and guts and go down fighting than what we saw. And I think in Curtis Davis, you know, he's never going to be a target for probably a top six or top 10 Premier League club. But I think he's had a fantastic career. And I'd just like to say that if you're looking for someone who's going to give 100% at the moment, he's one of the best performers in the Premier League. So that would be my look at the sort of player watch. Certainly Curtis Davis, Sam Clucas for us, Robert Snodgrass I've talked about, and I think he could play a big role for us, and indeed for Scotland, who are improving at the moment, over the next few months.
All right, and quickly for Tottenham, Michel Vorm was my man of the match, and was indeed the man of the match. They're not going out on too far a limb there. Was absolutely immense, had three or four instances where he flew off his line and cleared dangerous balls. And this is the point of having Vorm in here instead of, at this point, like a 50-year-old Brad Friedel, is that we don't have to change our tactics at all when we bring him on. So Vorm has done very well in Lloris's stead. We should have Lloris back after the break, but all due credit to Michel Vorm. I think one of the upsides of us getting the kind of draw that we did in the Champions League is Vorm might actually be able to get some minutes there. If we had gotten a much tougher draw, I think Lloris would have automatically been handed the reins there. But based on these performances and the fact that we didn't get the most dangerous group in the Champions League, I do think he may well be in with a shout for some Champions League minutes. As far as players that disappointed, I already talked about in the open, Kane, Ali, and Eriksen. I know they're dealing with some positional shifts, but players of their ability should be able to rise above that, at least in glimpses. And we really haven't even gotten that much out of them. So hopefully they can turn it around for us soon. All right, that'll do it for us today. So if you have any projects you'd like to plug or want to tell people where to reach you, now would be a good time.
Thanks for listening, guys. I've been Jim. You can find me on Twitter at JimKnight88. I'm also the gaming content manager for a company called Perform, who own a lot of kind of sports media websites like Goal.com, Soccerway, and we own Opta as well. So if you see any kind of betting-inspired content coming from those, that's normally kind of got something to do with what I'm doing. So if that's of interest to you, then I'd suggest heading over there and seeing what we're producing.
Yeah, thank you for listening. I'm Jay. I'm editor of TheEaglesBeat.com, a Palace fan site, but we have lots of football content as well. A weekly piece from Kev. I've probably stolen his thunder here, but a fantasy preview. And I'm also co-presenter of a local community radio show, football show, Back of the Net. You can get us on Twitter at underscore, back of net underscore, but I'm mostly at TheEaglesBeak on Twitter.
Yeah, hi, I'm Peter. I'm editor of social media Hull City Group, Tiger Link. Just want to mention that on Saturday I celebrated 50 years of watching Hull City. Very proud of that. You can get us on HCAFC Tiger Link on both Facebook and Twitter, and we do various blogs and fan TV and lots of local media. Happy to hear from anybody who wants information about Hull City.
Yeah, and I am your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. We'd encourage you to listen to all of the EPL Roundtable shows, which now includes the EPL Roundtable, obviously, the Championship Roundtable, and the Fantasy Roundtable. So be sure to check all of those out. They should be in this Depending on if you're on Acast or on iTunes, you should be able to see them from here regardless. Also, I do write a fantasy article for Jay, but probably not one this week as we have the international break, but I suppose we should talk about that. Also, Deuce is off over on playtoga.com. I've been helping Rob out on Razzball.com doing some of their fantasy ranks. I don't think I have to do any of my fantasy stuff this week, though, so I don't know why I'm rambling. We'll let you guys get out of here. So thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.